there's a whole period of time when you begin the process where you separate out your spiritual work from your worldly work. And you go to church on Sunday, or get high on Saturday night, or whatever your ritual is for remembering the spirit. Go on retreat, come to a workshop, meditate for an hour in the morning. All of these are wonderful. I mean, I do them all and I love them. But as the journey goes on and the taste gets sweeter and the pull gets stronger, if you're like me, you want to use more and more of your life experiences as part of the journey. I'm more interested in the Mondays through Fridays in terms of how each day or each event or each act becomes part of the journey. And the question is sitting in traffic, is going to the supermarket, is taking care of the children, is cleaning the house, is paying the taxes, is working among people that aren't interested in spiritual things, is any of that spiritual? Is it any of it useful? And if so, how do you use it? The first thing I recognize is that you ask that question. And the minute you ask that question, how does this act become useful in my journey of becoming more equanimous, more empty, more clear, more one with the spirit, whatever? That question itself starts to transform that act. Just the asking of the question, that's all it's requiring. Because the question itself creates a context in which the act exists that is different than the one it existed in before. You're driving on the freeway and you're in traffic and you're going to work and you're late and you're getting irritated and you're getting anxious and you're thinking about the excuses you'll make and whatever it is. And you're listening to the news and so on, and then you say, is this getting me free? And if not, could it? And then how could it? Now that question and the context it raises, like for me, since my method is Guru Kripa, is relation to my Guru, I can see my dialogue with him is, or that is, that each experience is part of a dialogue I'm having with the one of which he's the representative. It's like a conversation. And how deeply I get caught in the conversation, in its reality, its plane of reality, will determine how much I lose the fact that I am in conversation with him. When Mother Teresa talks about working in Calcutta with the lepers and says she is working with Christ, she is serving Christ in his most distressing disguises, there is an example of taking an act and through her contextual framework, transforming the meaning of that act. There she is dealing with a leper, maybe lying in vomit and urine, and she's over there ministering. And instead of all of the different role perceptual vantage points she could have in her head, the one she has is, this is another face of my beloved that I'm serving. And if your beloved is sick, what greater joy would you have than taking care of them? If you really love somebody. So these contexts, these perceptual vantage points, are really critical. And a lot of the practices is to remember the context in which the act exists. So you don't see it as just the simplest meaning of the act, like you're going from A to B to get to B. You're going from A to B to get to B, but also to get free, or to become one with the beloved, or to become more spacious in your awareness. The components for that to work, first that context, the question, or the devotional component, or the mindfulness component, whichever one you frame the situation is. It all has to do with framing. The next part of it has to do with you feeling that you are doing what is appropriate. It's called doing one's dharma. Doing that thing which is in harmony with your truth. And for that, you listen from moment to moment. We talked about consistency and truth. And you hear, does this feel like what I am? I mean, this is what I'm doing at the moment. You hear your dharma. And your dharma, as I said before, is you hear, you listen, not in a linear fashion, you listen in a gestalt way. You listen to your skills, your opportunities, your history, the responsibilities you have, the roles you have available to you. And out of that comes the next act. The Gita says it is important to do your dharma, not another's. That is, you can't imitate the Buddha or imitate Mary. I can't imitate Gandhi. I've got to become me. I have to hear my uniqueness and find the appropriate expression for my uniqueness, just like you do. And each of us has a unique form of manifestation, and you have to listen to the total picture to feel what is your unique and appropriate means of expression. It's very easy in the East, in some cultures, because they externalize your dharma. They say, if you are part of this caste and you are part of this age, you do this. Then when you're part of this age, you do this. But in our culture, we are so obsessed with external freedom that we don't have the external criteria. We say you can do anything you want to do, which leaves you in an interesting predicament because you got to figure out what to do. So you have to keep listening and listening and listening, and from moment to moment you listen, and it keeps changing. What I do at 60 isn't what I did at 40, but there isn't a rule in the culture other than that I get, you know, cheap fares and cheap pharmaceuticals and things. But other than that, there's no role for me at 60. I mean, I've got to figure out, am I going to make believe I'm 40 at 60 like most 60-year-olds do? You know, play shuffleboard and join 60-year-olds? That seems so bizarre to me. Now I'm going to start at work. I'm doing a course next spring with Zalman Schachter on eldering. I'm interested in how to become an elder in this society. We only have old people. We don't have elders, have you noticed? Other cultures have elders. Other cultures recognize that when people have lived the whole life, they might know something. But we don't. When you've stopped, when you can't any longer hunt a buffalo, we send you to Florida. So you'll be happy. So you have to listen, and sometimes you listen to the culture and it tells you information that is dissonant with your own inner truth, and you have to act differently than that. I often act differently than the culture around me, and I feel it's my dharma. So there's context and dharma. Two things that the Gita points out, which I'll just say quickly. One is being not attached to the fruits of the action and being not identified with being the actor. You're driving to San Francisco in traffic. You're going to work. Are you, who are you? How do you do? My name is Ram Dass. What's yours? I'm going to work. Like, I was with a woman. She was a Quaker lady. She was 60 and she was just about to die. And she said, Ram Dass, I've called you over because, she said, I'm so bored. I said, well, you're so bored because you're busy dying all day. Couldn't you, like, die 10 minutes an hour? I mean, it's interesting in the culture when somebody's dying, she's dying. Then everybody comes in and talks to the dying person. Well, we're all dying. You're dying too. But you're not busy dying. It's like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an ex-alcoholic. That's a good one. Hi, I'm Ram Dass. I'm an ex-alcoholic. Well, you have another identity besides that. We all have hundreds of identities. And the art of sitting behind your identities rather than getting caught in them, in being the actor. I'm talking, but I'm not talking. I'm just sitting here and talking is happening. Now, when I'm in the car driving to San Francisco, I am heading towards San Francisco and my commitments in San Francisco. Whether I get there or not, especially in earthquake country, it's up for grabs. How do I know whether I'm going to get there? Every act I do has some intention to realize a goal. And I do it, I hear what happens. I hear that I feel that it's the appropriate action, it's my dharmic action. Then I do it, which is another point, I do it as impeccably as I can. Because if you were serving the beloved, wouldn't you want to do it well? You wouldn't want to bring a breakfast tray to your lover with coffee spilled all over and the rose all wilted. You'd want to bring something beautiful to them and do it well. So I'm doing my dharma, I'm doing it as impeccably as I can. So it's an appropriate action. And I'm sitting inside just quiet, and it's all happening. And I'm doing it all as an offering or in order to become more mindful, that's the context. And whether I get to San Francisco, and of course I have the intention of going there, and probably I'll get there, and that will be a new moment. But because I have this other context as well, it diminishes my anxiety about whether I get to San Francisco or not, because whether I get there or not, both of those are going to help me grow. That's the problem. When somebody says to me, should I get divorced or not, and I say, it doesn't matter. They say, well, it matters to me. Yeah. But failure will teach me just as much as success about the clinging of my mind. And I know there are many things I've started that don't end up the way I expected. There are so many more variables in life than you can control. How can you control it? How can you control whether the bridge isn't bottled up by some weird thing? How can you control any of that? You can only intend to do something and start to do it. If you're busy anxious whether you get to do it or not, the anxiety doesn't improve the effectiveness of the act. So there is a whole way of doing an act that is part of a karma yogic act in which I'm doing what I'm doing as an offering. I'm doing it impeccably. I'm not getting lost in the drama of being the doer. I am not attached to the fruits of the action. It is my dharma. I was in a monastery, a Benedictine monastery once, and we were all silent other than the offices of the day when we prayed together. And the only time you could whisper was when you were in the line washing your metal plate and cup. Was really down home, austere. When you sat and ate, somebody read from the Bible, and it was really heavy duty. And I was standing in line to wash my plate, and the man in front of me, a monk, he had the brush, the soapy brush, and he was washing the plate, and I was looking over his shoulder, whispering in his ear. And I said to him, how long have you been here? And he said, 16 years. And I was just watching that brush go around in that plate for 16 years. And I saw that he was washing that plate. That was his offering at that moment. He wasn't washing the plate to get done to get to the next office, because, I mean, this is 16 years of this. He was just washing the plate. He was washing the plate. It's interesting, when you wash the dishes, am I washing the dishes to get done washing dishes? If you do that, you will notice that most of your life, you're busy doing something to get done doing it so you can do something else, which you're busy getting done doing so you can do something else. I got to get to bed so I can get up. I got to get up so I can, and you do it, and you're always living out of the moment. What you're adding is a second level of reality all the time into your acts. So that the washing of the dish is a deal to come into this present moment. The driving of the car, it's right here, the experience, the presence of all this, including the hand driving the car. You keep coming into the moment, not resting anywhere, because when you're driving a car, there's the visuals, there's the smell of carbon monoxide, there's the sound, there's the mirror, there's the body, there's the this, there's that. It's all there. It's this incredibly thick moment. What I have noticed is that as the moment gets richer, less and less am I going anywhere. I mean, I'm still going places. I'm getting on airplanes and going somewhere. But where is the Hakuin, the Zen poet, said, your coming and going is nowhere but where you are. Like, I get on a plane, I go to San Francisco, I get on a plane for Michigan. Now, I'm not flying to Michigan, you know, I'm just sitting here. And the plane is doing its thing, and air is going by, and stuff is happening, and then they land, they say, we're in Michigan. Okay. Now, did I go anywhere? Who went where? Okay. And it's far out to realize you're never going to go anywhere ever again. Because you're always here. Where are you going to go? I'm here. Then I'll get in the car and I'll drive to San Anselmo and I'll be here. Where are you? I'm here. Hi, where are you? Well, I'm here. Where are you? That other level of context changes the whole meaning of the acts. And it becomes this absolutely fascinating exploration to play with the stuff of your daily life to transform it. To start to see it as vehicles for coming alive, for awakening, for realizing the moment, for opening to God for whichever way you want to do it. It's often very helpful to have other people to share that with. And the best kind are people where you get into a contract which you say, I'll remind you about what you're doing if you'll remind me. It's called satsang in Hinduism, or sangha, or the spiritual community, whatever you want to call it. Like for me, around service, the Seva Foundation, the organization for 12 years that has served that purpose as part of my, that's my Seva or service satsang. We'll be dealing with something like blindness or violence in Guatemala or alcohol fetal syndrome in the reservation in Dakota, some heavy duty thing. And we'll all get really heavy duty. And on the puja table in the middle of our gathering, there are these glasses, these Groucho Marx glasses with the big eyebrows and the big nose. They're called the serious glasses. And if anybody uses the word serious, they put on the glasses and we stop. Because as Wavy Gravy said, if you don't have a sense of humor, it just isn't funny. Humor is an incredible vehicle for spiritual awakening. Incredible. And that's the fun of having other people to help you awaken. So what I want to suggest to you is quite appropriate to this culture. Like when I work with somebody that is in some situation where I'm attempting to serve them, instead of getting caught in helper's prison, as I call it, I'm a good guy, I help. The situation defines who does what. And I do what I do, and they do what they do. We put our cards on the table and see who's got what to offer. All of it is my work on myself. Because the more I work on myself, the clearer I am, the clearer I am, the more my service really helps other people. It's as simple as that. It's like a self-sharpening tool. And you see that burnout comes from your identification with being the actor and from your attachment to the fruits of the goals. Those are the two things that cause burnout. I mean, the reason I burned out from all the karma yoga was because I was attached to the fruits of the actions. I wasn't really free. I was really busy having you love me or getting the book done. Not only was I doing the book in which it would be done when it would be done, but I was busy getting it done. And that burns you out. So I'm learning just as you are. All I know is there is a way there, and I encourage you to explore it.
It's good for all hearts everywhere that we should share the blessing of all of this. Obviously, each of us takes away what we take away, and we touch whom we touch. And that's part of the way that the grace of this gathering spreads. A symbolic act of doing that is what's called the metta meditation, loving kindness meditation. Just imagine that surrounding us in circles, concentric circles around us, as far as the mind can imagine, are beings, sentient beings. They're beings that spread across space and across time. They're beings of the past and beings not yet born. They're beings in distant and far places. As far as the mind can imagine, beings in circles around us. And now coming into the middle of your chest, where we all meet, feel the warmth of the grace that we are sharing. And feel that emanate out from you towards all beings everywhere. Experience us now, heart to heart to heart to heart, as a radiant and luminous light. A healing light. A light that enlightens. And see that light going out as far as the mind can imagine. I will say four phrases, and after I say one of them, if it feels good, repeat it with us together. And let these phrases go along with that feeling of the warmth generated from the heart to all beings. May all beings everywhere be free from suffering.
May all beings everywhere be free from suffering.
May all beings everywhere be peaceful.
May May all beings everywhere be peaceful.
May all beings everywhere be happy.
May all beings everywhere be happy.
May all beings everywhere be free.
May all beings everywhere be free.
Yes. This has been a very, very sweet gathering. And it has been what we said it would be. It has been perspectives and practices to bring spiritual consciousness into daily life. It's incredible grace that we can all come together to do this kind of work. May you see everything that transpires henceforth as part of the path to bring you back to your true self. In India, when we meet and part, we say namaste, which means I honor the place in you where when you are resting in yours and I'm resting in mine, there is only one of us. Namaste.
This is the end of Side 8. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up Side 7 for your next listening.